Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, I am really excited to find out more about the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum in Ilwaukee, Washington, right here in the Columbia Pacific region. And today in the studio, I have the director of the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum, Betsy Millard. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
I'm thrilled you're here.
I'm very happy to be here.
And I am really embarrassed to tell you that I have not been in the museum. However, that is going to be corrected because I'm going to be going there before my program next week. Next week, I have Mac Burns on. He's going to be talking about the big 50th
Great.
Anniversary Bridge Celebration. And you all are such a huge part of that because it's Megler. It's the
yes.
Astoria Megler Bridge.
Yes.
So today we're going to find out about it, and I then will be going to the museum, and today we're going to find out about the museum and about your special exhibit tying in with the 50th anniversary celebration of the bridge, the memories of Megler. But before we talk about all that fun, exciting stuff, please tell the listening audience about yourself.
Well, I'm a relatively new transplant to the area, having spent my childhoods here in the summer because my mother was from this area. But I got here about 12 years ago, and I've spent the last 8 years at the museum. This is my retirement project. I spent most of my career, all of my career, in art museums. So I most recently as the director of the Contemporary Museum in St. Louis, Missouri, and recently being 15 years ago now. But after I retired, I found I missed museums more than I missed just about anything about, working with the objects. It was really that museum experience. So when I saw a job application in our wonderful Chinook Observer, it said, wanted museum director part-time, I thought, I can do that, and applied. And did not expect to be there this long, but I've really enjoyed it. It's flown by, so it just feels like it was yesterday.
Well, obviously the word museum has so many different meanings to so many different people. And for you, what does it mean? Because your career has been in museums. And so why is a museum important? I mean, what does a museum mean to you?
Well, for me, museums are very sacred spaces in a way. They're places for people to explore. They explore their, what they think the world is made of, what they think their own psyche is made of in the way of art, their emotions, and also they connect. So they connect people to, in our case, they connect people to the past, they connect people to the place where we live, and they connect people to each other as they go through that space together. So it's this sort of wonderful power that I think artifacts and art has to help people just kind of become closer to each other and the world.
That's really beautifully said. Yes, it's an experience that is really, it's a visceral experience. It's,
yeah.
it's there's so many things that are
yeah.
happening. And you're right, there's a bonding experience when you go to a museum
yeah.
with someone.
And museums are places where I went to often as a child, my parents both being artists, we were dragged into museums. And I found just this incredible kind of peace there because you could just kind of wander around and look at stuff and get caught up in whatever caught your fancy. It wasn't directed like television and you have to, look at this now and then look at that now. You just get to, explore, I guess is the best way to put it, and discover things.
And in today's world, when we are just bombarded by so much information all the time with things demanding our attention, having a place, a museum, you're right, where you can look deeply and be really deep, really present there. That's rare.
Yeah, and not every single thing in a museum is going to create that for you, but you can walk right by that stuff that isn't as interesting and, look over there. There's a printing press. Well, that's kind of neat. Or there's a rail car. Or, isn't that a beautiful piece of glass in that display? Or I love that painting. And there's always, there's always something there.
Hmm. For those listeners, and for me as well, please, what is the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum? Let's talk about its history and what you have there.
Well, the museum is really this incredible embodiment of community, more so than really any museum I've been in. It was begun when in the early 1980s when the telephone utility company in Ilwaco moved and left their building to the town of Ilwaco. And they had this kind of large building, and they weren't quite sure what to do with it. And one of the city council people was a woman named Noreen Robinson. And the mayor, then mayor, said to Noreen, figure out something to do with this building. And she said, well, I think we need a museum.
And that was in what year?
That was in 80. I'm terrible at dates, but that was about 82, I think.
Yes, I'm seeing it right here.
Oh, good.
In 1982. And, so in 1982.
Yes. And so Noreen decided that they needed a museum. So she called the Smithsonian and said, we want to start a museum. How do you do it? And they sent her information, and she continued to call the Smithsonian. They kept sending her information, and she kept calling, and then finally they kind of said, Noreen, you kind of need to get some professional help here. So you really need to, there's a great program at University of Washington that trains museum professionals. Maybe you can get an intern to come down and help you over the summer, but you're going to have to pay them. This isn't going to be volunteer forever. So she would sell hot dogs at the local baseball games. And she would do whatever they could do to raise funds. And they raised funds and they got an intern down. And it kind of took off from there. And there were just so many people involved. I mean, Noreen gets a lot of the credit because she was such a dynamo. But there were so many people from the community involved in making that museum happen, bringing in their artifacts, their stories, and then getting them in a place and codifying them and making sure that we can find them again and again to keep retelling them. So it continues to be that way.
Yeah, you don't think about what it would take to start a museum from scratch. You know, and first then you have to also say, well, what's our mission? What stories are we telling? And since you're in such, you know, the rich history of the Chinook and of the, this river, and there's so much there.
Exactly. And in our case, a lot of the stories get told according to what we have to tell them with. So it didn't start out with a group of text panels that says this is the story of this region. It really started with things that came into the museum's collection and then allowed us to kind of, you know, add in and enrich those with the stories behind them. And so I think for me, that's my favorite kind of museum, where you actually have the artifacts and the patina of that artifact with all of its richness. And so from a Chinook and canoe to a stone mortar pestle anchor baskets, that helps us tell a little bit of the story of the Chinooks in this region. And then we can move on into, you know, 19th century settlement of the area, fishing, and all the way into charter boat. The history of the charter boat fleet there. And so it's, you know, it's a lot on of our emphasis is on where our artifacts richness is.
People come and give you these artifacts, and then you determine how you're going to tell that story. And you used a phrase that I had not heard before when we were talking before we went on the air. And you said a Lifeways Museum. Just explain what a Lifeways Museum is.
Well, it's really a museum that kind of focuses on how people lived and what you know, threads that carry us through. I mean, we all cook. So, you know, our museum has there's a little village area, and in that village area, there's a kitchen, and in that kitchen is a wood stove and, you know, old tea kettles and things like that. And so, you know, the things that people used in their everyday lives that help, again, tell those stories of how we got to here. And it's amazing how many kids with their grandparents come in and their grandparents can tell them, oh, I had that when I was a little kid and this is what you do with it. And you know, the kids are in awe because they've not ever seen, you know, a rotary telephone or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And I think people are curious and people are hungry to connect
yes.
with the past.
Yes.
So I love that it's it sounds like this kind of living, breathing kind of thing in a way. A museum is
very
alive.
Very much so.
It's alive. And so you have something like over, what, 23,000 artifacts?
Yeah, easily. It's growing all the time. And we're not, because we have limited space and limited budget, we aren't able to do the wonderful things like the Columbia River Maritime Museum can do, which, you know, taking in big, you know, objects, big boats and wonderful things like that, and taking care of them. So we kind of get more things that are, you know, a lot of paper. We have a lot of things on paper, photographs, right. Documents, maps. We love maps. Old maps of this area are just fantastic resources, full of information. And then everything from that to, again, you know, teacups and plates
you do have a big object. What's the largest object you have?
Our largest object is the railcar Nakata, which is an 1889 Pullman-built railcar that was built for the Owaka Rail and Navigation Company, and built in Chicago at the Pullman factory and shipped here in 1889, where it ran on the rails until 1930, when the Union Pacific stopped rail transportation.
And that's in your courtyard. So you have not only, and let's talk about how big the museum is.
Well, it tends to ramble a bit, but overall we have about 15,000 square feet of exhibit space, and we have a smaller building just behind us, which is our collection storage area. And we have a discovery garden, which was built at the time of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial and includes a lot of indigenous plants and is now cared for by the Pacific County Master Gardener. So it's very interesting. They've done a lot of interpretation there.
And I know that the museum has ongoing events. You have, I mean, of course, when you think about the Long Beach Peninsula, you realize that there are several museums. You have the Cranberry Museum, yeah, the Kite Museum, and then you have the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum in Owaka, which is a town of about how many people?
About 800, 900 people,
right.
Yeah.
But you have an active group of folks who are involved in volunteering, correct?
Very much, yeah. The museum is all part-time staff and volunteers. So they really, and it's always been that way, and that's what makes it happen. Really dedicated people making the museum keep going. I mean, we're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4. We do events. We just finished our Clamshell Railroad Days, which is our big summer event. And coming up will be our Cranberrian Festival in October, which takes lots of volunteers to pull together. And so we've got a really great group of people, and we always like new people coming in.
All right. So if you're interested, there are opportunities to volunteer. I also love that you have two working model railroads in addition to this fabulous big passenger,
We do. And the Peninsula Model Railroad Club meets at the museum every, I think it's first and third Monday evenings. And they help maintain those model railroads because something is always coming off a track. And so those guys get in there and clean them up and make sure all the little connections work. And kids love them. And it's a lot of fun. One of them is in the old freight depot of the Owaka Freight Depot. And it is a small-scale train that runs the whole almost 20 feet of the of that building. And it runs along a little model of the peninsula as it would have been in about 1890. And it's all handmade. Everything on in it, all Ooh. The buildings, the old hotels and the old cabins, and everything is handmade.
I'm excited to see that. That is amazing. And you also train community historians. That's one of the things that you do there.
That's one of our most exciting programs. January through April, the Community Historian Project takes place, and it's about 15 to 20 students each session, and they are trained in a seminar program with experts in the field with pretty much a full history of the region. We kind of take different topics and use those topics as our subjects, and it changes. But some things we start every season with Kathleen Sayes talking about how this peninsula was built, literally from, you know, sand, and then the plants and the animals and the watersheds, and, you know, just to get a sense of place. And then we go transportation history, Chinookan history, fishing, lumber. We try to cover the ground and help people connect to their passion for history and sort of figure out what they're interested in doing. And those community historians come back and do some really amazing things.
I love that you said that they that once somebody becomes a community historian, they are out in the community bringing the heritage and history of the region to life every day.
Absolutely. We have, well, one example is in the exhibit that we'll talk about, the Astor, the Memories of Bengler.
And we're going to talk about that in about 1 second. Let me
Perfect.
Just do a quick station ID. And because we, yes, we could talk about the museum for a very long time, but we want to also move on to these, because you have special exhibits and we want to talk about the Memories of Bengler. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, I'm speaking with Betsy Millard. Betsy is the director of the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum in Owaco, Washington. And they now have a very special exhibit up, Memories of Bengler, to tie in with the Astoria-Bengler Bridge 50th anniversary celebration. So let's talk a little bit about Bengler, Memories of Bengler.
Yeah, well, this wonderful anniversary that we're celebrating this year, and I think you're going to be talking with Mac Burns at some
Next
point.
Next week, yep.
Because the Clatsop County Historical Society has done a wonderful exhibit on the bridge itself. And so in as this discussion was taking place as to what everybody could do around the 50th anniversary, we started thinking, well, what do we have that would tie in, that would make sense, it would help tell our story? And so we decided to focus on Bengler because people call the bridge the Astoria-Bengler Bridge, but what's Bengler?
What is Bengler?
And,
exactly.
Yeah. So we thought, well, it's time we, because really the bridge goes to Point Ellis and Bengler is just east of the bridge. But Bengler was the old, was called Bengler because Joseph Bengler owned the fish receiving station that was located there. And then in 1908, that site was purchased by the, by Union Pacific. And it became the wharf for the deep water port for the steamships that would come in from Portland and Astoria and bring passengers who would board the train at that point and then go up the peninsula to the hotels and their cabins and all of those wonderful things that people would do, come bathing at the beach. And so it became Bengler when they actually, Union Pacific designated it as Bengler, the Bengler Wharf, they called it.
So then someone from Portland might say, well, I'm going to be now taking the, I'm going to be going to Bengler because that's where you would land and then go up onto the
peninsula. The TJ Potter would come in from Portland and they would land at Bengler. And our community historian, Gary Cobes, did an amazing paper, which we've included in the exhibit, really exploring how Union Pacific decided to put so much money in place. Like, why would this little railroad in 1908 build a tunnel through a mountain at Fort Columbia to get to Bengler? I mean, granted, they wanted a deep water port because coming in and out of Ilwaco, they were always dependent upon the tides. So the train schedule would change every couple days according to the tides. And so they wanted a more consistent schedule, but it wasn't particularly a wealthy railroad, and there weren't that many people riding it. And Gary had been doing research and found a cache of letters at the Oregon Historical Society that were between the attorneys for Union Pacific, and found that there was a real interest from Union Pacific to get a toehold. E.J. Harriman wanted a toehold on the Pacific coast at the mouth of the Columbia River because he was in a railroad war with Hill, who owned the Spokane-Portland-Seattle line, who had acquired a lot of the Columbia River. So Gary has put together an argument that really talks about the importance of Bengler as a really important site for Northwest railroad history, which is a much broader than our just, you know, Ilwaco, Columbia Pacific little
section. Well, that's exciting. See, that's what the great thing is about museums, the research.
Yeah.
And then you find things that you didn't know before.
Yeah, I mean, history is never set. I mean, there's always things coming up and there's always new ways not new ways. I shouldn't say that way, because it's not like, oh, here's a new way of thinking about it, but really just new information coming forward that helps us really, you know, look at where we live in different ways.
So, of course, you've heard that the tourist number two, is last remaining wooden ferry, this amazing almost 100-year-old flat-bottom wooden boat that just came down from Puget Sound and is here and will be here for regatta. And Joanne Ridout will be doing quite a bit about that. So it's really exciting to have it here. Did that ferry then land at Megler?
Yes, it did.
So
well, at first landed, Elvin, it gets in. You've got to come see the exhibit because there's a lot of dates and changes. But for most of its life, yes, it started going to the Point Ellis ferry dock. But long story short, after the ferry wars and when Elving acquired Megler from the Union Pacific, the tourist number two came back and forth between 14th Street and Megler. And it's so exciting to see it back. I had to go down to 17th Street and take a picture of it this morning before I came. The timing is great.
Yeah, I think, you know, museums are so important, and I look at it as a floating museum, and to have it here, to live here, to be able to have people go on it, to eventually have it go up and down, you know, the water here up the
It'd
river
be great to be able to go back to Megler.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Wouldn't it? The dock is gone, but Megler's still there.
Yeah, Megler's still there, and that's what you would learn if you go to see the memories of Megler at the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum in Owako, and that exhibit is up until the beginning of October.
Yes, October 2nd.
October 2nd.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You know, one of the things I think people maybe don't realize that the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum is doing all these fabulous things that you're doing, because as you mentioned earlier before we went on the air, that, you know, you don't have a lot of money for marketing. You have part-time staff. So people drive by when they go by Owako and they don't realize that this is this jewel right there.
It is. We're on Lake Street, which is kind of just off the main drag. We're right across from the post office. When people come, they come in, they sort of look around, they're like, oh my gosh, this place is, first, it's really big for a small town. And they go through the exhibits and they come back out and they're like, we had no idea this was here. And we get a lot of people even from our own peninsula who don't know it's there. So we always encourage people to come down. We're free on Thursdays. We had a nice grant from the Port of Owako to help us get more people in. And so every Thursday is free. And then we're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4.
And so how would you describe then, like, the health and well-being of the museum and what is going to happen now? Obviously, I think especially during this huge celebration that will be continuing for some time about the bridge, going to the Memories of Megler exhibit is great, but you also have other exhibits that are changing on a regular basis. And so how are things overall with the well-being of the museum?
Oh, the museum's in great shape, and it's vibrant. I mean, it really is a vibrant place. There's lots of people doing lots of different things, and sometimes I think we might stretch ourselves a little thin, but we always seem to give ourselves a break at the right time and come back stronger than ever. And membership is really the big key to any museum's ability to do what it does. Those folks who, like you, people who invest in what they care about in their community. And so we have a nice strong membership, over 350 people strong, which is pretty good for our region. And people who have been members of the museum since it started, and new members coming in. So that's always key to
be
anybody's.
Able to continue. Absolutely. And again, it's becoming, as things are changing so rapidly in the world, it's so important that we have a root, that we have, you know, a touchstone, that we have a place like Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum to find out who we are, because where we come from and where we live, that we need to understand that. We only have a few minutes left. What other things would you like the listening audience to know about either the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum in Owako or the Memories of Megler, or just anything you'd like to say?
Well, I think come over that bridge. It's been 50 years since it was built, and it makes getting back and forth easier. But it is amazing how many people from both sides of the river go, oh, I just, you know, it's so hard to get over to Astoria. I can't get over there. I can't get over to Ilwaco. Make the effort. Come on over.
It's like a few minutes. It's like, what, 15, 20 minutes back and forth. I mean, it's kind of so.
And even with construction, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
And as you go across, come over and spend time at all of the museums, and likewise in your own community, because I think if there's anything I want to push, it's that museums matter, that we are, you know, really essential to life, you'll enjoy it.
Because you're right. You know, we're telling the stories. And the thing is, we don't have our tribes anymore. We don't have the elders passing the stories down. So the museums now become the places where we find out the stories.
Exactly. And being able to tell those stories and retell those stories in a way. And the thing that's just blown up, I think, with social media is the old pictures. I mean, seeing all the old pictures of the Tourist Number 2 on the Facebook pages.
Yes.
And we post a lot of old pictures. And there are these groups that post old pictures. And you start to get this. And it's not just nostalgic. It's real interest in how we've changed and what we cherish. And what kind of, as we've said, keeps us rooted in these places. So that's what museums can do. And to see those photos in real life, not just on a screen, is really fun. So come see real stuff.
And you actually, I mean, again, what a gem in Ilwaco this museum is. You have a gift shop too, right?
We do. We have a really nice little shop, which our main focus is books of the area. So we try to carry all the local history books, which don't often, you know, get out there in some of the bigger shops. We also have some wonderful local craftspeople who put their things in our shop. And, you know, it does help support the museum. And we also want it to support people's interests. So,
and so really, if people are listening to this and they maybe have an artifact that maybe would be appropriate for the museum, do they just call you? Do they just say,
give us a call? And we have two people in our collections, two professionals in our collections division, and Danella Lucero and Amy Bosworth, and they're both professional collections managers. And so we take very good care of things. And, you know, not everything is appropriate. So we really only collect the things that connect to that place. And so what we call provenance is very important. But it's how we've been built. And those 23 plus thousand objects all came from people. Everything has been given to us. So we're very fortunate that people want to preserve their history.
Yes, and if you also are interested in volunteering, becoming a member, you want to tell people the website?
Yeah, our website is long. It's ColumbiaPacificHeritageMuseum.org. But our phone number is shorter. It's 360-642-3446.
Thank you so much. It's been terrific to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Just full of excitement and energy, and I can tell you are passionate about the museum. And so I say we all need to plan a trip over there if you're, you know.
The Great Columbia Crossing, over to Ilwaco.
Exactly, over to the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum. Yes, thank you so much for being here today, Betsy. And I want to express my appreciation to our fabulous engineer this morning, Caitlin Brister. Thank you, Kate Brister. And also my gratitude to local banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, take a moment for yourself. Today, take a deep breath. It's so healthy. It's such a good thing for your body, and it also slows everything down in a world that's very, very fast. And then focus on the things that are going well in your life. There are always those things that won't go well. Watching the news can make people very depressed. So focus on the things that make you feel joyful, and that's good for your body. It's good for your health, good for your spirit. And then give yourself a compassionate and loving hug or a pat on the back for being you, for being here now in this moment, the only moment which exists, the now moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.